You know, I love alternate history, but I'm also a skeptical person by nature. So when I see something like a giant stone edifice or some small-scale precision stonework or just a big rock that's been moved around and you look at it today and you're like, man, that would be a difficult task. I tend to frequently not be on board with the mainstream explanation because frequently the mainstream explanation is, well, you see, it's there and they had ropes and people, so that's how they did it. I find that wanting. But on the other hand, I'm not usually one to jump on board with high technology. I usually find an explanation, quite frequently find an explanation anyway, that's a lot more mundane and that satisfies me at any rate. So you don't usually find me saying that the ancients had sonics or steam engines or electricity or something like that. And especially when it comes to moving big rocks, I usually find a way to explain that satisfactorily to myself. But you know what? Let's take it to the limit this time. Let's just drive this truck all the way. Let's talk about Baalbek. At Baalbek, you got these three gigantic stones in the wall, known as the Trilithon, and we've also got three more in the quarry. The biggest stones that have ever been quarried by human hands, and the three biggest stones that it seems have ever been installed into any edifice by human hands. So let's go ahead and take a look at this one and see if my whole skepticism and the alternate history side of everything still holds up. Where does Dan land when he looks at the big boys at Baalbek? Big girls, one's called the pregnant woman, right? Anyway, hi, my name's Dan, and welcome to Dunkin'. Baalbek was heavily built on during the Roman times, with the largest temple of Jupiter ever built being built at Baalbek, way out in the backwoods of Lebanon. But that's not the only plus-size edifice that we see there. It is the one that we're going to focus on, not the Temple of Jupiter specifically, but the podium that it sits on. That's really what we're going to look at. A foundational retaining wall beneath the temple, it clearly shows three different types of masonry being used, with the largest stones being about 20 feet off the ground, stacked on other courses of masonry even. The large size of the three stones and their placement so high off the ground has caused this section of the podium to be the subject of many alternate historians' theories. So before we go forward, this is important to note. The alternate history claims do not involve these stones, or these stones, or these stones. Just these. The ones like this, and by default, the ones beneath them, since they obviously had to have been placed first. Now, the mainstream consensus is the Romans built the entire edifice, including the portion that I just highlighted. So let's see what the evidence for this is. To discern whether or not the Romans made that portion of the wall, we should start with looking at the basics of Roman architecture. A good place to start there would be the Roman foot. This is a ubiquitous form of measurement that was used throughout the entire empire, throughout its entire existence. It was derived from the Greeks, so it was there from day one of the Roman Empire. Now, it wasn't used at every single site. This is really important to note. Every single thing that I'm going to mention, we discuss the Roman architectural types and stuff that they used to use. None of these were in every single site. So the exclusion or inclusion of any one of them doesn't necessarily mean everything in and of itself. However, the Roman foot is something that we saw in a lot of different places back in the day. So it is a good place to start, a good yardstick, if you will, to measure this whole thing to begin with. Now, exact measurements for the smaller stones that are under the Trilithon isn't something that I was able to find. If anybody can help me there, well, that would be tremendous. But the height of those stones is recorded at 3.89 meters high. Now, this doesn't quite equate to any known Roman measurements, with the conversion to Roman feet giving us a figure of 13.14189 feet. And the three stones that make up the Trilithon give us similar results, with the blocks being 19.04, 19.33, and 19.38 meters in length. This converts to 64.3243, 65.3040, and 65.4729 Roman feet, respectively. Now, the latter is potentially a measurement made using a Roman foot, 65 and a half Roman feet, right? But the other two seem unlikely candidates for those pretty random numbers. Now, again, this is not definitive proof that the Romans didn't build this portion of the wall, but it is a pretty good strike against it. I mean, one of the more common features, their normal measuring unit, isn't present there in this section of the wall. But there are other things that Roman architecture employed that are kind of telltale signs, and we can look for those as well in this section of the wall to see if maybe it was or wasn't made by the Romans. According to architecturecourses.org, Roman architecture is characterized by its use of durable materials, arches, decorative columns, vaulted ceilings, monumental facades, symmetry, and practicality. Since we are looking for the foundation only, arches, columns, and vaulted ceilings aren't things we can actually look for. There's not many ceilings in the foundations of most buildings, even way back then. But the others, durable materials, monumental facades, symmetry, and practicality, these are things we can look for, as well as typical Roman bricklaying techniques. Now, durable materials, they were obviously used. We're talking about a stone building thousands of years later, right? So I guess we could say that goes in the Romans' favor, or, I mean, you could just say we're talking about a stone building. We could ignore the durable material side of this as well and just move on to the next, which is what I'm going to do. And the next one would be monumental facades. This is when you would walk up to a Roman building and you see these just gigantic columns and shit when you first show up. It was just meant to blow your mind. We see this on most of the temples and other structures of their era. The entrance is designed to make you recognize the power of the people who made it. In this case, the entrance to the temple itself is on the east side, and the trilithon is on the west side. The three stones that make up the trilithon are, of course, the most impressive part of the podium. They're just gigantic. So standard Roman practice said those three stones should have been front and center. You should have seen them right when you walked up the podium on your way to the Temple of Jupiter. But that's not what we see. As a matter of fact, they're on the opposite side. You kind of have to, like, be a landscaper or something to really notice these things. So, again, this does not mean that the Romans didn't build the thing, but there's another strike against it. This is not normal Roman building practices. The most impressive part of that thing should be right in your face when you walk in the door. Now, symmetry is something we see in Roman construction, and it's a very common feature to find for obvious reasons. I mean, it's aesthetically pleasing, right? It's what we see in nature. And the trilithon, well, it obviously breaks this convention. Not only are the three largest stones all on one side, but the masonry beneath also changes as you go around the structure. There's a glaring lack of symmetry on the podium, and as a matter of fact, all it takes is a few pictures for you to see that it's not even close to symmetrical at all. Again, the Romans didn't always build things perfectly symmetrical. None of these rules completely apply to everything, but this is another serious point against it being a Roman construct. Now, the final item listed in architecturecourses.org is practicality, and I don't really think that most people really even need to discuss that. The largest stones ever installed in a wall by human hands are probably a little bit less practical than, say, a brick you can carry around in one or two hands, right? But not everybody agrees with this, surprisingly enough. Margaret Van Es, the lead archaeologist in charge of excavating the place for quite a while now. She was on World of Antiquity a few years ago, and she had some unexpected academic opinion incoming.
Why did the Romans choose to make these massive stones and move them to the temple when they just could have made some smaller stones? Wouldn't that have been easier?
We calculated a little bit. And Janine told me it's much more economic. So it needs less work and less people to transport the bigger stones than many smaller ones.
Oh.
Now, there's so much to unpack there that we won't be able to get it all done there, but we will look at the implications of some of what she said. Right off the bat, it is really, really just kind of one-sided, polarized thinking. She's not looking at all of the aspects of this. It's very much the math says, ergo. Yeah, hauling a bunch of rubble is inefficient, but so is trying to figure out how to move stone so big we're still talking about it a few thousand years later. A happy medium, that's ideal. A size and shape of stone made standard at the quarry. This allows the same tools to be used to transport the stones to the construction site. Ramps, rigging, capstans, pulleys, rails, rollers, all manner of tools that could be reused if the stones are basically identical. By comparison, trying to grab the biggest stones you can and move them to the site is horribly inefficient. Now, I've seen this sort of misinterpretation of construction methods before by academics. When discussing things alternate historians fixate on, they end up working things out on paper without taking major details into account, and this causes guys with dirt under their fingernails to roll their eyes at these people, much like they roll their eyes at me when I make a video like this. The final thing to do to see if it's Roman or not is to compare masonry styles to other Roman masonry styles. like some archaeologists and historians have done with these bricks here on the podium and these bricks from Herod's projects. Now, when we focus on the section in question that I mentioned earlier, we see some odd things. First of all, we have to account for the manner of construction, the placement of the blocks in relation to each other. The course of masonry below the trilithon is also large, but far smaller than the stones that get everyone wondering about the place to begin with. This is abnormal not only for Roman construction, but for Ashlar masonry period. Normally what you would see is the largest stones on bottom, the foundation, then smaller stones, and then maybe another large course on the very top to kind of sandwich the two together and put the smaller ones, make them a little bit more earthquake-proof is the idea, right? That's the kind of thing you would normally see. But here we see these smaller blocks and then these massive blocks and then more small blocks. It's really weird, and it's the kind of thing that I dare say you almost never see anywhere else on the planet. The shape of the course is somewhat reminiscent of Roman podiums, but not entirely. The resemblance is half the shape you would expect to see. So we do see something that one could claim may have Roman origins. The courses below this, they're the next on our list to investigate. They're offset from each other, a typical design feature used to lay courses in masonry in those days. However, these are not offset in the regular Roman manner. The bricks are somewhat mismatched, with the end result as an appearance that looks professional on a casual glance, but on closer inspection, it kind of just seems like they made do with whatever blocks that they had next in line. This isn't entirely unique. Indeed, Roman construction techniques were so varied that we do see this sort of work elsewhere in the empire. But it is far from common, and it is very odd to see underneath the massive blocks that form the trilithon. There are marks on a few of these blocks that some archaeologists have interpreted as rope affixing points, which is more evidence, as far as they're concerned, of the Romans being involved. Now, there's a lot of different styles of Roman masonry, so I'm going to cover my beautiful face with pictures now of Roman masonry, and then I'll put the Baalbek stones underneath the trilithon there, and you can compare and contrast and make your own decision. I think you see how I feel about the matter at this point, but I'll let you decide. Anyway, it is not a clear-cut case of these stones looking Roman or not, but it does seem that there is little evidence for the portion of the podium in question having been built by the Romans. In fact, some scholars would agree with my overall point there, and it's a kind of a secondary scholarly consensus that the Phoenicians, rather than the Romans, were the people who built this podium. But to be honest, it didn't take me very long to determine if it was most likely inaccurate. Phoenician foundations or retaining wall construction is much more rough in appearance, and they tended to use large amounts of wood in their buildings proper. Now, this means the remnants that we have are in far worse condition than their Roman or Greek counterparts, but I'll go ahead and include a few images on the screen anyway. I'll keep my beautiful face uncovered at this point still, but you can see the vast difference between the Phoenician construction and what we see at Baalbek. It's just way different. So in my opinion, they're not even a viable candidate almost at all. Now, there are three more massive blocks still lying in the quarries, and these may offer us some insight into the trilithon itself and the area in general, of course. Now, the quarries themselves are not too far, the furthest being about 8.5 kilometers from the temple. As these are quarries, the evidence of the previous builders, that's long been removed. But we do have the three massive stones for us to look at, and they do have some potentially telltale signs. One is the manner in which they were carved, the technique of leaving the foundation of the stone and supporting that stone as the bottom was removed is one that we know that the Romans employed. Also, the dimensions of the stone that we can fully measure do line up well with the Roman foot, better than the trilithon stones for certain. Now, like most of the evidence presented in this video, this isn't definitive proof that the Romans were the ones that carved those stones that are still in the quarry, but it is good evidence that that is quite possibly what happened. But who else occupied the site? We have the Romans and the Phoenicians, so what other candidates do we have to have possibly even messed with this stuff? Now, here's where it gets frustrating to the amateur researcher, and even more frustrating when you realize how this has been portrayed to the public. Because Baalbek, it's been like a tourist attraction for over 400 years. And like long before archaeology was a word, people were going there and playing archaeologists, digging holes in the ground and grabbing shit and taking it home. And it's been turned upside down. Even in the late 19th century, when the Germans first started excavating there, they just went there and dug holes in the ground, but it's 19th century archaeology, right? Care, man? So by the time that we bring modern tools to bear on it, guess how good the stratigraphy is? Guess how good the context dating is? Guess what we can actually discern layer by layer? Still, the site was found to have had several pottery and pre-pottery Neolithic artifacts, and there are remnants of a settlement in the enclosure itself. But very little is known about these people, with a huge part of that reason being that there's still a city built on top of it. Excavating through people's homes tends to be unpopular. And due to the jumbled stratigraphy of what we have excavated, we know very, very little. Even the things that are basic, we don't quite grasp. To quote the paper examination of the deep sounding in the great courtyard of the Jupiter Sanctuary at Baalbek, the lithic evidence of the southern section, since the quantity of items in the total assemblage is not very high, and chipstone industries for the post-Neolithic periods are not very well known, chronological developments and toolkit comparisons are not possible at the present stage of research. So very little can be gleaned from the site from the archaeology that has been done so far. And this cuts both ways. I mean, when Brian Forrester tries to say that, you know, a buildup of dirt on one side means the site is older than it is, that's really, you know, the site's been so messed with, somebody could have thrown that dirt there when they were digging shit up 150, 250 years ago. Or when Dr. Miano says, but there was a partial column drum that was found down inside of the enclosure, and it matches more modern, more Roman ones, not modern, but Roman ones. There's nothing to say that somebody wasn't chucking that stuff in there as backfill when they were digging somewhere else. The stratigraphy of that site is completely annihilated. Normal archaeology here is at a disadvantage because the early and proto-archaeologists who dug here, they really had little regard for things that we take for granted today. So the knowledge is limited, and little can be definitively said about the Neolithic people who occupied this site. Now, in my previous video discussing the moving of big rocks, I examined Dr. Miano's comparison with the trilithon at Baalbek and the Thunderstone, a larger stone moved by the Russians in the 18th century. Now, some very specific tools were necessary for the Russians to move that stone, better metallurgy and the invention of a screwjack being the most critical. Friction caused spheres to be chosen over rollers, and the first spheres were made of iron and they were crushed flat, so eventually brass spheres were used of a specific alloy that was strong enough to hold the freaking stone into place. And to move the stone, they used a bunch of wooden contraptions, the pulleys and stuff like that, capstan and levering systems. But all of these things, they were made of wood, but they all had, like, metal involved, modern metal for the time, you know, 17th, 18th century metal. And as opposed to, you know, 2,000-year-old metal, it was a little bit different. So they did have a few different things at their disposal than we had in the modern day. So when you see people talking about the Thunderstone, when Dr. Miano brings up the Thunderstone and says, well, this shows how they could have moved the stones of Baalbek, really what he's showing is the difference in technology as to how they were able to move a big stone and what they would have needed at Baalbek that we know that they didn't have. So that's not saying that there was no other way for them to do it, but if you're going to compare the Thunderstone to it, you're kind of pissing up a rope. It's like comparing the marksmanship of an M16 with the freaking longbow. These are not the same tool, man. Just because they're designed to do the same thing does not mean they are remotely the same. So that I think is an important thing to take into account here as we go forward. Link is in the description to that video, by the way. So where does this put us? I mean, the academics prefer the Romans, but it seems that the architecture doesn't line up with the Romans, and the architecture lines up even less with the Phoenicians. So we have these Stone Age people that we can't really say anything about without speculating because the site's so jumbled up that they don't even know if the site was, like, basically inclined to support the temple or if the temple was made to support, like, in support of the site. There's so little known about Baalbek from the ancient days. So what we do know is that, you know, they got three stones in the wall and they got three stones in the quarry. And say that they did go, you know, the whole freaking Russian version of moving the Thunderstone, and they used the ramps and jacks and all kinds of spheres and whatnot, specialized tools to move these stones. Well, why did they stop at number three? Because the first one will be the hard one, right? That's the one where you got to make the tools and you got to figure it all out. After you've moved three of the damn things, man, that fourth one and the fifth one, sixth one should go easy. Now, one of those stones, it has some structural issues, so maybe that's why they discarded it. But the other two, there's no reason they shouldn't be in the wall. Especially if, like Margaret Van Ness says, this is more efficient than moving little ones. There's no reason. But anyway, besides that outlandish proposal, why? Why didn't they put these other ones in the wall if they were capable of putting these first three in the wall? Well, I have a theory about that, or a hypothesis, and since this is my video, unless you click away right now, you're going to have to listen to it. When the Romans took over Baalbek, the Trilithon and the associated section of wall was already in place, and this dwarfed other Roman architecture, period. Now, as Rome liked to make an impression with their buildings, they were kind of faced with a dilemma. Here's this backwater city. It's not really spoken of much at all in the record, and certainly not spoken of as being significant. But it challenges the dominance of Roman might by virtue of its very existence. The size of the podium stones are so massive the Romans were forced to build larger temples than they ever had before, just to show that they were as capable, if not more so, than these original builders. To match the symmetry created by the Trilithon, they began work on three stones of the same size, but ran into trouble when they realized they had no means of rolling the stones. The guys quarrying the thing say no problem. The guys tasked with moving it look at it and be like, what? I don't think so. The sheer weight destroyed the metals available at the time, and the use of wooden enclosure to form a giant wheel was also just out. The wood was too weak, and it created too much friction. The scale of the task was just beyond them, but they weren't allowed to admit it to the people whose area they were occupying. So when Graham Hancock says, why didn't they slice up those big stones like loaves of bread and use them as smaller stones, which normally would this kind of thing the Romans would do, it's pretty pragmatic. I believe the reason is because they were told not to. We're going to move those stones. Let the locals think that that's going to happen tomorrow, maybe next week. It's in the works, man. We're going to put those stones right up there with the rest of them because we're just as cool as the other guys were. So the stones were left as they were, with one eventually being chopped up a little later on in the second construction period at the site, long after the concern of matching the Trilithon was gone. By then, the Romans had achieved with the locals what they've achieved with modern academics. They gotten credit for moving three stones that they didn't move. Now, to be clear, I'm not saying this is a product of ancient high technology. As a matter of fact, we know that stone was the premier tool-making and building material for like hundreds of thousands of hominid years before this time. So the generational knowledge that was passed down for so long that we've lost now because we don't build with stone anymore, by comparison, we don't make tools with stone anymore. The knowledge is gone, right? We don't teach our kids this like it was taught generationally for so long. That knowledge, who knows? There's no way we can wrap our heads around what they had, to be honest with you, without a lot of experimentation. They had millions and millions and millions of man hours into it, literally millions. And we've cut that off. It's gone. So it's going to be very difficult for us to figure out exactly how they did it, but I don't think ancient high technology is the answer. I think it'd be something that we'd just be like, oh, wow, pretty sweet, man. That's amazing, profound, and simplistic all at the same time. But we're going to have a hard time finding that if the academic response is, oh, well, we already know that the Romans did it, and this is how they did it, and blah, 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 blah. They used the same tools that these guys did, even though they didn't have the same tools. Well, if that's the attitude, we're not going to get anywhere. And now, admittedly, there's a huge difference between the people that are penning the papers and the people that are doing the debunking. The attitude is different. The papers definitely say we need to do more research. Even the debunkers will say we need to do more research when they talk to the people that write the papers. But when it just comes straight out, just time to debunk. We know who built Baalbek. We know how they built it. The Trilithon, it's the Romans. Why is there even an argument here? And let's be clear. The whole point there is because they think it's an argument. It's Atlantis. It's pseudoscience versus science. And because of that, the baby gets thrown out with the bathwater because there is no question. The way these stones were moved is a mystery. Academics that write papers on the site, they absolutely say so. The only people that will tell you it's not are debunkers and people that follow them on the Twitters and on the YouTube.